This week is an exciting week for us at the Nova Business Podcast. We interview one of the most recognized names in big tech, Facebook. That's right, we interview Facebook's state policy manager, Erica Woods. Erica is responsible for legislative tracking and policy recommendations across all 50 states. She's helped craft policy positions on a range of matters, including data privacy, geolocation, and biometrics. Most recently, Erica's most critical focus has been managing state and local outreach for programming initiatives, such as the Facebook Community Boost Program. On today's episode, we talk about it all. Data privacy and transparency to what Facebook is doing to help small businesses in our region. We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Nova Business Podcast. You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
Well, thank you, Erica, for joining us today. First thing I want to start with is I want to hear about your experience and when you first joined Facebook. And I mean that in two ways, which is one as a user and two as an employee.
Well, I'll start with a user. I went to Vanderbilt University in Nashville, and I believe outside of Harvard, Vanderbilt was one of the first schools that opened up to Facebook. As you remember, you had to have an EDU email in order to access Facebook. And so I remember being in Nashville and having friends from different universities. Nashville has tons of universities. If you didn't know that, there's tons, I think like 10, all in a small radius. And we had access to Facebook. So I thought I had like the golden ticket, and it was back then the pictures were black and white, and you put like your residence hall and things like that. So I was one of the first Facebook users, and I never would have imagined, I'm not going to tell you how many years later, but many years later, I would be employed at Facebook where I've been for 3 years. Interesting story about my first, I guess, glimpse of Facebook life. I was scheduled to be at Facebook at the end of March on a Monday. I was flying out to San Francisco for orientation. The Friday before is when the Cambridge Analytica story hit the press. And I've got, you know, my mom and dad calling, like, are you going to have a job? Like, what's going on? I've got friends sending me articles. I have my boss emailing me, like, please still go to orientation. Don't be nervous. And so I was literally in the inaugural first orientation class after Cambridge. So when I tell people in the policy world, I hit the ground running, I literally hit the ground running day one. It's been now over 3 years and an amazing ride. So that's my first impressions.
That's awesome. I'll tell you, you know, my story on joining Facebook. I mean, I think it was like my last day I was at school. It was my senior year. And my friends were all talking about this new thing. I'm like, what is it? Like, no, you got to go on it. And we'll keep in touch over the summer. And that's kind of the same thing, you know, like yeah. You came to your school and you jumped on. And then, of course, they grew from there. So I think that's really interesting. What about like, you know, kind of going into this though? I mean, you've got a really strong track record. Like you didn't just go straight from college into Facebook. I mean, tell me a little bit about what you were doing before Facebook.
Yeah. So after Vanderbilt, I went straight to law school at WashU. I stayed in St. Louis a number of years working at a private law firm there, doing kind of just a general first year research writing, litigation fun. And I was just sitting there and a previous boss of mine from Capitol Hill called and said, you know, there's this amazing opportunity to work for the Obama administration. I think you would be great. It's an appointee position, so you'd be there through his term. And I was like, oh, of course, sure. Send my resume, because I knew I wasn't going to get it. And I think like 6 weeks later and a TSSCI background check later, I was moving to D.C. And in my mind, I was going to stay in St. Louis. I was going to come back. But it's kind of like once you get that political bug, once you're in D.C. and just smell the air, there's something about it that just makes you hooked. And I've been here now for almost 8 years. I never went back to St. Louis. I never went back to the firm. So I worked as an appointee in the DHS General Counsel's office. Many folks don't know that DHS was a bunch of agencies that kind of merged together because of 9/11. And they had this ultimate mission of protecting the homeland, but they were pretty infant in their experience. So I was helping, you know, CBP, I was helping FEMA, I was helping the Secret Service just become an organization. So we had just lots going on. And then I got another call from the same boss, and he saw the work I was doing at the department, and he actually worked on a committee that oversaw the department. So it was kind of like, what better person to hire than a person from inside who knows how the department works? And so then I went to Capitol Hill for 3 years, and I oversaw the department that I once worked for. And I worked on the Committee of Homeland Security under ranking member Benny Thompson. And I was there also during an administration change, which was quite fascinating to see Obama leave and Trump get elected and come in and rewrite tons of policies. So it was a very, very busy time, as you can imagine.
So what makes you decide that, okay, I want to now work for big tech? Because that's a big change.
It was a big change. I think for me, being in politics on Capitol Hill during the administration change, whatever side of the aisle or, you know, demographic ideology you have, no one expected President Trump to get elected. I think I can openly say that. And so it really had me thinking just kind of long-term, like, do I want to play the Russian roulette every 2 years, not knowing, you know, if my boss is going to want to retire or someone young and qualified and spunky comes along and wins an election. I wanted to just think about a little bit more of a stable space for me. And the opportunity at Facebook came along, and kind of the same things. I wasn't a techie at all. I knew how to work Facebook. I did barely use my Instagram. And I was just like, if I apply to this job and they ask me something technical, there's no way I'm getting it. But after a number of rounds, it just made sense. It was a perfect fit. And luckily, they wanted to have me. And it was a switch because it was a state policy role. My background was federal. But they were just like, you know, we're going to teach you along the way. We're going to give you the tools as long as you kind of know how to work with electeds and know how to express our policies and our positions. I think you'd be great. And it's been a very rewarding 3 years. I will say that state policy work is very different from federal. Bills move very quickly and they do become law very quickly, but it's been exciting. I absolutely love working with state elected officials, attorneys general, mayors, governors. It's fun. It's all 50 states, so never a dull moment.
Let me ask you, like, what is a day in the life for Erica look like today? So tell me a little bit about what Facebook is doing from the community outreach perspective.
I can conveniently say no day is the same. Oftentimes you wake up thinking your day is going to go one way and it goes completely different, which makes it exciting. My days have honestly varied over 3 years. As I mentioned earlier, my first focus about the first year of my job was kind of getting out of Cambridge, regaining people's trust in Facebook, in our product. And then we transitioned to get ready for another election. You know, folks wanted to make sure there wasn't going to be a lot of misinformation on the platform and political speech wasn't going to include false information. You know, we really wanted to make sure we got the election right. And once the election was behind us, now I'm kind of just really focused on censorship. People want to be able to express themselves on the platform, and they're looking at Facebook and our policies on how we censor different electeds. So it's been quite a journey. On the engagement side, we also had a global pandemic that no one expected. So we all went to our homes where the use of social media became even more important than ever. And we started thinking about our small business community, which is essentially the backbone of Facebook. That's how we've kind of gotten where we are, and how we could help that small business community pivot and become digital in a time where they couldn't have their shops open and customers coming in. So it's definitely been a very diverse 3 years. I'm happy that we're hopefully on the end of the pandemic and offices and businesses are opening back up. But now they have these cool online tools that they can continue to use as well.
Can you talk through some of the initiatives that Facebook put forth because of the pandemic to help the small business community?
Yeah, so it's been a number of things. Firstly, we just looked at our actual footprint and the businesses that were in our backyard, and we knew that we had to help. So we launched a series of grants, first being just the COVID relief grants that were granted to small businesses in places that Facebook had a physical presence. So either an office or a data center, we took care of folks in our backyard. And then we opened it up to minority-owned businesses because we quickly learned that they were closing at almost double the rate of any other small businesses. So across the U.S., we offered minority-owned small business grants. And those grants were both monetary and advertising dollars to help those small businesses. As far as platform goes, we opened up a COVID information hub. And that was a space that people can get up-to-date, accurate information about COVID, about policies in your city, you know, different curfews and requirements when it came to masks. It was also kind of a one-stop shop for business owners that they could get maybe like some additional small tools on advertising and how to reach audiences with their posts and their videos and things like that. We also went digital with our Boost program, which is a small business program that used to be in person, but we made it virtual. And that's just a free service that we use internally to educate people about Facebook and Instagram. You get to learn how your advertising dollars work, how to reach vast audiences, how to share your story and maybe get certain themes with your videos. So it was a pretty much all hands on deck approach to the small business community, because like I said, those are the people that use our tools and are successful. We want to make sure that that continued.
I think, I mean, you've put a ton out there just in this. I mean, I think about just the way the world has changed in the last, let's just say 24 months. I mean, even just shoot the last year, it's a very different world, right? So one of the things I saw when we were prepping for the interview is, you know, fact checkers, for example, you've hired twice as many fact checkers as a business.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I feel like there's a great degree of, I guess we can kind of go into ethics and corporate responsibility when it comes to that. I mean, if you're producing a platform for consumers to use, whether it's for commerce, political opinions, ideologies, et cetera, like you want to make sure the information presented is accurate. Where do you see that? Like, where's that metamorphosis going? Like, where do you see Facebook when it comes to just something like curating content over the next few years? Like if I'm a business, for example, like what does that look like for me? You know, my goods, services, my customers, et cetera. Like how does that impact me?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson that came out of Cambridge Analytica is the importance of transparency. And transparency is certainly the overarching theme when you think about these new fact-checking tools that we come out. We want people to know where information is coming from, be able to access, you know, sources, how long it's been on the platform, and also inverse opinions. So with a lot of like news articles, you'll be able to actually click on the article. You can see the original source. You can see who paid to have the source there, if it's an advertisement or things like that. We just want people to be able to look back and see what they're viewing on the platform. And that's definitely kind of what I see as the future of Facebook. People being able to share their thoughts and opinions, but also being able to kind of check it to see where the source is coming from. And that just creates fair dialogue on the platform. And that's what we want.
Well, let me ask you this, because I hear the ads all the time and I am not literate when it comes to Section 230 reform, I think is what it's called. So I hear these Facebook ads talking about internet regulation and updating it, because I mean, let's face it. I mean, if the internet were a car, we'd still be driving without seatbelts.
Absolutely.
Right? Because the internet has continued to evolve, but it hasn't really been regulated at all. So tell me a little bit about that and kind of where Facebook sits on internet regulation, if you can.
Yeah. So you hit it right on the head. We are growing at a faster rate than the federal laws are keeping up with. So it's been a number of years since there's been any type of comprehensive federal laws for privacy, for data protection, for anything. So specifically with Section 230, that is a federal law that protects the platform. Meaning if some nefarious act happens on our platform, we are not the bad actors. It's someone else that's the bad actor. So we are protected from any type of liability or lawsuit. You know, it's a law that we certainly like and we care about, but we understand that the internet is evolving. And Facebook was one of the first companies, Mark was on Capitol Hill, who said, we are open to regulation. Let's work together. We would love to see a comprehensive internet rule of the road that we can follow, because, you know, we're expanding, we're continuing to grow, and we want to make sure we're doing so in the proper regulatory way.
And a lot of the criticism that I hear about Facebook, especially recently, has been towards like the algorithm of, hey, this is, you know, maybe there's someone who's anti-vaccine and then they get more information about, you know, why the vaccine is not something that you should consider. Or maybe you're into some type of like conservative or democratic values, you continue to get more content like that. And so there has been some criticism about the algorithm and it really targeting some behaviors that maybe we don't necessarily want in our community.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? And what's Facebook doing to help direct that behavior to a more positive direction?
Sure. So in general, you know, looking at our algorithm, which honestly changes every single day, I can confidently say by the end of this interview, it's probably going to be different. But in general, we know that folks want to see and interact with the people that they like. They want to see the subjects that are important to them, and they want to have authentic content. So as you see over the last couple of years, we've kind of pushed down in the algorithm, the public articles and things like that. You're seeing more directly from your family and friends in those posts. When it comes to just vaccine information, we are constantly looking and making sure that statements are in compliance with the CDC. We certainly don't want people to receive and take in misinformation that is completely contradictory to what health professionals have advised. And we also give people the power to own their experience. If you want to change your settings to where you're not seeing as many ads or not seeing as many articles, you have the complete ability to do that on your settings tool. We send reminders for people to make sure to check their settings and their privacy every few months to make sure that you own your experience. We want you to, you know, feel like you like your Facebook, you're seeing the pictures of your family and friends that you want to. And like I said, the algorithm is changing every day. We're learning from this feedback that we get from the public, and we're just continuing to try to make it a good experience.
It sounds like it's probably extremely difficult to do. It makes sense why you've hired so many more reviewers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're doubling down on our efforts, and it's definitely paying off. We want to make sure that people trust our platform and have a good experience.
And I have to bring up the Apple versus Facebook situation here. You know, we had to do it. Apple recently rolled out the update, which provides users the opportunity to the prompt to give permission to apps to track their information, right? And since the update, I had read that only 4% of users opted into the tracking. So I have to ask, you know, what's Facebook's thoughts on this now that it's rolled out? And what are you going to do for the next steps? Like, are you tracking the impact that it's having?
I'm not tracking the impact that's definitely going to be on Apple, but we're certainly looking at legislators. If you've seen at the state level, there's been tons of bills that were introduced this session on just the same issue, app fairness, and making sure that apps are properly tracking information, that the data is properly protected. So we are going to let the states handle that and electeds, because they are in the position to make the laws that we should be governed, and we will adhere to those accordingly.
Does Facebook kind of feel like they're the ones that get picked on sometimes?
So this is an Erica opinion. You know, no, I think with a great product comes great responsibility. You know, we have been in the market for 18 years now. And if you think about the black and white photos up until today, like, who would have ever thought we'd be talking about elections and COVID vaccines and things on Facebook? You know, we are a powerful tool. We have 2.7 billion users across the globe. And so if it means we can't mess up as much, I think that's a responsibility we have to take, rightfully so. Our mission is to bring the world closer together, and we want to do it right. And so, sure, call us out when we get it wrong, because that means we're going to do the right steps to get it right. And I'm okay with that.
I think that's a great outlook. I mean, I can see the challenge, you know, in doing that, because you want to allow freedom of expression, no matter what your business is selling or what you personally believe, right? I mean, like, that's right. The thing. That's what the platform's built on. But at the same time, there's an obligation for, you know, truthfulness.
Yeah, and safety. You know, it's hard because right now we're dealing with a lot of censorship issues. People are upset for Trump getting banned from the platform or certain posts getting taken down. But we have an obligation from the top down. I mean, we've got kids 13 and older on the platform. So we're not going to allow certain pedophile behavior to happen. We get to take that down. Child safety is important. terrorist activity. We get to take that down. We are still a private company. And so, as I mentioned, we want people to have an enjoyable experience on our platform. So that does mean taking some content down. And that's why we implemented the independent oversight board, because maybe it, in some cases, it's better to take it out of Facebook's hands and have it before a body of really smart academics who understand the internet and our policies, and let them decide. Like, take it out of our hands, let them decide if that piece of content should be on the platform or not. And it's been working really well. I think that we've really come a long way in the last few years on getting the content right.
I think, I mean, you guys are, again, the ones that get picked on. It's always funny to me when people say, I'm deleting Facebook because they share my info. And then they say, I'm only going to use Instagram from now on. You know, it's always funny. Let me kind of bring you back to this, though, which is as a business. I mean, you guys, you said it before, but you've done a ton to help support businesses, especially during COVID, especially minority-owned businesses. But at the same time, too, like, you know, if the platform didn't work the way it's intended to, as far as ad spend and ad revenue, people wouldn't use it, right? So where do you see this going over the next couple of years as a smaller community business, especially, again, with your role, working with the local market, working with businesses, et cetera? What's your advice to a business right now, let's say if they are on Facebook, but also if they're not currently leveraging Facebook as a business?
Yeah, I mean, I would look at our growth and the number of potential buyers and shoppers that you can reach. Like, I don't know if the last time someone's bought an ad in a newspaper or on TV, it's pretty darn expensive. And I think that we have a model that works for every single budget, whether it be $1 spenders to thousands of dollars of spenders. We've got something for everyone. And also, you and your authentic self is free. Facebook is free. Instagram is free. And some of the most successful profiles that we see don't even use advertising. They show their authentic self getting ready for work, or showing their new product, or showing their kids. And they've got amazing engagement on the platform. And so we just tell people, you know, use it, try it out, tell your story, tell your business's story, because the reach that it has, you're going to reach someone who might have not shopped at your cookie shop or your clothing store before. And I just try to remind people of that. The internet is a pretty cool place to be right now while folks are at home.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's funny, you mentioned the thing about bringing your authentic self, and it's free. You know, I mean, you think about the whole influencer market. You know, so like, yeah, as a business, do you have influencers you could recruit for your product? I mean, like, some people just do it for free, right? Because they love your product.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then where do you see Facebook kind of plugging into, let's just say, Northern Virginia specifically, right? So like, what initiatives can you tell us about that you're looking at for 2022 and beyond, as far as like how Facebook will interact with the local community here? Barring any other pandemics or elections and things like that.
Sure. Virginia is a special place for Facebook. It's one of the few states that we have not only a data center community in the Richmond, Northern Virginia area, but also an office in Reston. So we're growing quickly. We've got lots of employees at both locations, and we continue to think about our footprint there. So we will continue to engage with the local community, the school community, because when you have such a big presence, you want to make sure your backyard is taken care of. So I can continue to value Virginia. I think it'll continue to be a really important place. We've got a great relationship with the electeds in Virginia. Virginia is only the second state in the country to pass comprehensive privacy legislation. So we, you know, are very supportive of what the electeds are doing. We've got a great relationship with the attorney general as well. So it's home. Virginia's home for us.
When you had mentioned policy, and so that was one of the final questions I wanted to ask you about, was I know that Facebook has spent more than any other big tech company in 2020 on lobbying. What are you looking at for policy right now? And what will you be looking at over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think in general, it's just helpful to know how Facebook works. I think tech in general is very complicated. I learn something new every day, and I work for the company. So I can't imagine what it's like for electeds to try to think about tech and the internet and how Facebook works and what are their constituents need as well. So a lot of it's just kind of proactive outreach. Hi, you know, I am Erica. I actually do work at Facebook. There's someone behind the screen, and let me help you. You know, oftentimes we're talking to them and they just have basic questions about getting into their account and posting things. And that opens the door to then understand how our products work, what our vision and our mottos are, and just working together to come up with good comprehensive policy, which we've been really able to do in Virginia. It's been a fantastic state to work in. You mentioned kind of the lobbying. Well, Mark's been on the Hill a whole lot in the last 2 years. So I think 4 times in total. So it took a lot of prep to get him ready. But, you know, we accept. When we get invited, we accept. We want to be transparent and open. We want to be able to answer the questions that will result in good laws and policies. So we're happy to engage.
Well, we're happy to have Facebook in our backyard, in our community, helping out businesses, but also recruiting talent here. We love to see that. Just, I want to provide the opportunity for you, you know, where should we point business owners and people who want to follow Facebook and what they're doing? Where are some initiatives that you're focused on or that you want us to direct listeners to?
Yeah, so I would just say make sure to look up our Boost program, facebook.com/boost. And that is kind of the one-stop shop for business owners to look at cool tips and tricks on reaching audiences, on getting your advertising dollars the longest stretch that they can. It's actually one of my favorite programs, and we've had it for now a decade. So it's really had a long kind of stretch. When it comes to COVID, we're still in the midst of the pandemic. We want to make sure people are safe as they begin to start opening and also have vaccine information for their region. So I encourage people to look at our vaccine information hub and then just make sure that your settings are right, your privacy is right. We want you to own your experiences. Always remember every couple months to do your privacy settings check. I do it on my phone and computer because I want to make sure that I'm seeing the content that I really care about.
Well, thank you so much, Erica, for joining us. We had a great time talking with you and learning more about Facebook.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.